Once again, it's my pleasure to stand before you to bring you the lesson this morning. We're thankful for everyone here, for your presence. If you are visiting, we certainly welcome you. I didn't write on the board, and I had an idea to do a PowerPoint. Haven't got there yet. I just spent too much time studying, I guess, and didn't have time to set it up, as I'm not used to doing that yet, but I hope to do that. We'll have a lot of verses to go over. I won't go over a lot of verses. I'll mention them. And the lesson this morning is a lesson concerning slavery and the Bible. Now, the question might be, why this lesson? Well, it may not affect you, whatever your age is as an adult. It may affect your children and grandchildren if they confront the idea of slavery and all that it means today to a modern mind compared to what the Bible teaches. They may need to understand how to study the Bible, because there are places in the Bible that if you don't read those carefully, if you don't use hermeneutics, that is a proper way of studying, generally understanding the context, the previous context, the past context, the whole book, and all the things that led up to that situation or issue, if you don't study that way, you can take a verse out of context and apply it to the way that we think about things today and come up with the wrong conclusion. There are many skeptics of the Bible who will point to slavery in the Bible, and it's not addressed directly by God as something that should have been stopped, something that should not have existed, and we'll go over why those contentions don't hold up in a careful study of the Bible and what the Bible actually teaches about slavery. Now, keep in mind, when we use the word slavery, we're using a word that didn't exist when King James, when the original Hebrew text was recorded. The word servant was actually the Hebrew word ebed. Slave is something new. It was about the 1400s that the actual word slave, S-L-A-V, and then E was added, and there's different spellings, because of the Slavonic people, people who were taken as prisoners of wars by the Huns, and later the Roman Empire developed from that to take prisoners of wars and make them slaves as we know them today. So when King James wrote the King James, translated the King James Bible in 1611, they took a word slave that didn't carry all the luggage or baggage that we do today with our American history of slavery in 1616. So 1611 to 1616, you have a gap of the definition of the word slave that didn't exist previously. And if you go all the way back to the Hebrew Bible, slave wouldn't have been a word that the Hebrew ear would have heard. They would have heard ebed, and the idea with it was servant, usually an indebted servant, someone who was working off a debt. And that's what we're going to break down as we go. I won't have time to go into an in-depth lesson as I would like to. I have more resources and information than I can provide, so I'll have to do it in an overall scope, basically to help those who are interested to understand how to not be uncomfortable when somebody brings up this issue, and to have a confidence that you know what the Bible actually teaches. Because skeptics, when they look at the Bible, aren't looking to prove the Bible is true. They're looking for verses that seem to promote their ideas. Just as during the abolitionists, that is those who have tried to oppose slavery in the United States, Abe Lincoln and others, and that caused basically the Civil War, those abolitionists from the North, those who wanted to get rid of slavery, had to fight those who used the Bible and said, look, here in the Bible it says to treat your master a certain way, to be respectful, to be under a master. And so they'll take some things out of text, which we know today existed then. There are good people and bad people who read the Bible. Even Christians, in ignorance of society's ways, can misinterpret what the Bible actually teaches. So I want to help those who don't know how to understand this better. Now, many of you may not be uncomfortable at all with these verses because you may understand the idea that the Bible actually taught concerning slavery, but some may find it uncomfortable. And so when we talk about slavery, and keep in mind, the Bible didn't have that word, but we're going to use that word because that's the idea that we apply. Because there were prisoners of war in the Old Testament, and so you could apply our modern word slavery to them, in a sense. So when we use a word, any word in the English language, we've borrowed from different cultures over time, so it's dynamic, it changes. The Hebrew and Greek don't change. They're concrete languages. That is, they're dead languages. What they meant was what they meant. They don't change into what we might mean today. I had a conversation with Chad a while back. You know, gaslighting is something a few years ago I wouldn't have ever said in the context that it means today. Gaslighting, I read on the internet with the newer generation, is to kind of treat somebody in a negative way, to do something to somebody, to avoid them. When I was growing up, gaslighting was to light a gas light, literally, gaslighting. That's something you did, had no negative connotation. When we read the Bible and we have the idea of slavery, realize we're carrying with it a negative connotation. It did not have that in the word servant, Ebed, Hebrew. It was positive. It always had positive ideas behind it. God did not institute slavery. Man did. If you go back to the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, everything's perfect. God had gave them freedom. Except God told them, as their creator, created in his image, there was something they shouldn't do because it was not good for them. That is to break his will, to sin, to take of the tree of the fruit of knowledge of good and evil. We know the trespass happened, and so you have sin expelled from the garden. What happened? Man had to work. Childbirth was difficult. Man, when they reject God, mankind, has consequences to that, and human governments developed. And so when we get to the Exodus, we see that God frees his children, Israel, as a nation, to bring them into a covenant with him out of Egypt, who was keeping the Hebrews as slaves. But do your study, the Hebrews kept, the Egyptians kept other Egyptians as slaves, servants, with hard task type work. Using bricks and mortar and such with the Egyptians, Hebrews, they did the same with their own people. So the idea of race throughout the Bible is not there. Ethnicity is not there. It has to do with power, wealth over those who don't have it. And so we'll get into that. So as I begin with the idea, keep this in mind. I'm going to ask you a question. With what you know about slavery today, based on our American history, 1616 through the 1800s, end of the Civil War, your idea of slavery, is slavery morally wrong? Is all forced labor morally wrong? Because slavery involves forced labor, taking someone, usually kidnapping them, forcing them to labor. Now, keep this clear as I go through my lesson. Slavery in the United States was never right, never correct, never something that should have been done. But it was done, and it was different from other types of slavery. When America, the colonies, the ships went over to Africa to receive slaves, at first it was the own African country selling their own people who were weaker as slaves. And as those colonists got sick, they learned to just go to the shore of Africa and receive slaves there. Because going into Africa, you had disease and warring tribes, and it was more dangerous. So they would just go to the shore, pay for their slaves from other African slaves, bring them to the United States. Half of them, 40 to 50%, died in the trip over because of confinement in the ships, malnutrition, disease. Nothing about slavery was good. But when you answer the question in your mind, is slavery morally wrong? Is all slavery morally wrong? And is all forced labor morally wrong? Well, think about today, prisons. Prisons are forced slavery. You incarcerate someone for their crimes. Depending on their crimes, they may be in there for life or they may get the death penalty. You are forcing someone against their will who does not want to go to prison to be in prison. The Constitution allows that to protect other people's rights, to keep order and chaos, keep chaos from reigning. You have rights as a citizen, and so do others, but they violate those rights. They may intentionally or unintentionally kill you, and there are consequences to that. So we incarcerate them. Is there anything wrong with making someone pay for their crimes? I think most of us would say no. That's also in the Old Testament. If someone did a crime, God had revisions. He had provisions of how Israel as a nation was to deal with their own people and strangers who came into Israel with crimes of punishment, of theft. The Ten Commandments is written to deal with moral crime and evil and sin. So keep in mind, as we go along, that in the United States, we have prisons. We understand it. And it may not always be perfect, but it does what it has to do under the Constitution, under the laws and rules the United States, as man has in our society, to say, here's where we can incarcerate, imprison, enslave somebody. And most of us agree that's right. When somebody has killed somebody, they need to go to prison, if the jury and everything has proven that. But then think about the military. You've heard about those who are patriots, and this has affected the church. It affected the church in the Civil War when people were reading the Bible. Should they fight, North and South, etc.? Is it right to go into the military draft? We've had the selective service in the United States. It ended about 73 for a while. When I was growing up, I thought I was going to go. I didn't go. I wasn't a patriot, but everybody told me you need to fight and die, if so be, for your nation. Okay, that's all I knew. I wasn't a Christian. Okay, I'll have to do that. It didn't happen. But as I evaluate it, and Christians struggle with it then and sometimes today, how much can we be part of the government military, which can also enslave you? They will force you, once you are enlisted or drafted, to do their bidding for 4 years or so. You may make a career out of it, or you may not like it as you go through boot camp and have to fight in a war and take someone's lives that you don't have any argument with, but your country says, your government says you have to do it. That's a form of enslavement. So there are forms of slavery. Is it okay to force prisoners to work, force labor without pay? Well, prison systems do that. Is it okay to confine people? So there are different forms of slavery, and as I said, the word didn't exist till 1400. From the Slavonian people, the Slavics, who were taken as prisoners of wars. But what I'm going to notice that there are challenges to us by those who are atheists. One of those that is on the internet as one of the four horsemen of the atheist movement today, the new atheists, Sam Harris, there is Dan Barker, Christopher Hitchens, who passed, and Richard Dawkins. Those are considered the best of the atheist today. Sam Harris, who's very intelligent, challenges Christians with this quote. In asserting the moral wisdom of the Bible, it is useful to consider moral questions that have been solved to everyone's satisfaction. Consider the question of slavery. The entire civilized world now agrees that slavery is an abomination, a word he borrowed from the Bible. What moral instruction do we get from the God of Abraham on this subject? Consult the Bible and you will discover that the creator of the universe clearly expects us to keep slaves. If you don't study the Bible, that may be uncomfortable when you read those verses in Deuteronomy, Leviticus, Exodus, about slavery. Well, leave your American idea of slavery behind and go into the Old Testament with that word servant, and understand fairly what the Bible is teaching there before we come to a conclusion. As we know, 1 Corinthians 11 teaches an order of being subject to someone. 1 Corinthians 11, it's God, Jesus, in a marriage situation to husband, wife, and of course children. We're all subject to each other for order, for peace, for stability. That's God's family order. In the beginning, God had marriage. That was his idea, his design, his institution. Now, when the Pharisees came to Jesus in Matthew 19 and 9 and asked a question about the law of Moses and divorce, concerning divorce, Jesus told them it wasn't that way in the beginning. He goes back to Genesis, God's order. But because of the hardness of your hearts, Moses allowed divorce, and there are certain qualifications under the law of Moses to get divorced outside of fornication. So God doesn't stop a society and say, you can't do that. He allows man free will to run a society. But when God has a covenant with people like Israel, he makes regulations to stipulate how they're going to work in society, being children of God's kingdom. So slavery is a broad term. In the Old Testament, it's ebed, E-B-E-D, and the Greek word is doulos, D-O-U-L-O-S, servant, bond servant. That's what they understood. Now, as we get to the New Testament, and we will in a little bit, slavery was changing a little bit to chattel slavery, C-H-A-T-T-E-L, like cattle, ownership of a group of things. It could be cattle or men. And so that became the Roman way to take away rights. Now, the Bible regulated, had restrictions on slaves. The Old Testament law permitted it because that was man's social order and his government outside of God. The regulations in Israel were totally different from all the foreign countries round about them. Those around them were very abusive, and they did not have such rules. The Bible allowed in Deuteronomy 10, 7 through 19, the Bible says that God is not partial. He does not regard persons. That is, it's not about race. And the analogy there is Matthew 19 and 3, marriage in Genesis was given by God, but man was changing it and abusing it. And so God did not stop this, but he regulated it in man's society. So there are analogies we can think about when we understand when somebody says, why doesn't the Bible condemn slavery? Well, because it didn't exist in the way that we're thinking about it today. It was different. It had a purpose. It was mutually agreeable. It was something that was actually good. Now, some people say the Bible condones it, that is, approves of or speak in favor of it. The Bible doesn't condone slavery in the modern sense. It condones the agreement that was mutual to help somebody. If you were a poor Israelite, you could go to another Israelite and say, hey, I'd like to work for you. And they can only work so many years because the stipulation was Jubilee year, they had to be freed. But they want to work off their debt. If you give me food and maybe land or let me take care of your animals, I'll work for you. Same as today, employee-employer relationship. You may not think of that as slavery, but it is a form of slavery because your free will is limited when you work for someone. You can't just do what you want to do. They have rules and restrictions so that everybody's safe. So it's more like that, employee-employer. Somebody needed something, you work for somebody. Abraham, how many slaves did he have, as we use the term? Well, they were bondservants. They were bound to him to work off debt. He took good care of many of them. Jacob was sold into slavery into Egypt. What'd he do? He bought some Israelites for Pharaoh later on. It kind of goes in a circle. Now, there are good slave owners and there are bad ones. That is, even in America, there were slave owners that were good and treated their slaves good, even though the situation was horrible and terrible. And there were bad slave owners who were abusive and didn't care about any kind of human rights. So there's good and bad in every situation. To be a servant is to have servitude, service, submission. There's abusive and non-abusive. In colonial slavery from the 1800s in colonial America, it was abusive, harsh, racial, and it wasn't racial in the Bible. They had no rights. In the Bible, you had rights. Masters were owners. Masters in the Old Testament were someone in a contract with you. They didn't own you in a sense that they owned everything about you. They owned you in a sense of your debt only. God regulated it. He curtailed it, limited it. So the difference between the Bible and societies that came later, such as Leviticus 19 and 34, there was no racial ethnicity involved. If a stranger came into Israel, they were to be treated just as you would treat another Israelite. A foreigner came into the country. That idea carries over into the New Testament and the Beatitudes. The Bible doesn't legislate man's social order It's not political. It doesn't tell governments to stop doing this and do this. It teaches it through the gospel by changing hearts, individuals, and then society changes. God did not say you can't have your own social order to mankind. But when he makes the covenant with people, he limits that social order. Jesus said you can't serve God and mammon. Well, the fact is everybody serves either God or mammon. Mammon can be man, mankind, money, someone who gives you something. You're either serving your work or you're serving God. And now as Christians, we have to kind of find the fine line and choose which one is who we're actually serving. We serve God spiritually. When Jesus came, Isaiah speaks of him as a servant. Can we put slave in there and be comfortable? He was a servant to man, to die on the cross for sins that he did not commit. He washed the disciples' feet as a servant. Can we say slave? God himself in the flesh was a slave. Jesus is now ruling on the throne of David, the throne. There is always, you're always serving someone, either God or sin, evil or goodness. You make a choice. Now, there are certain aspects of slavery where people didn't have a choice. They were kidnapped, and the Bible addresses that. That was a penalty of death. If you kidnapped a man in the Old Testament and made him your servant, your slave, there was a death penalty with that. If it was found in your possession, someone, you say, I didn't kidnap him, I just bought him, still, death penalty. So the Bible is very strict about how it regulated servanthood. Why is slavery in the Bible at all? Why not stop it? Because all forms of human servitude are not morally wrong, as I said, prison systems. Working for somebody, you're making a contract, it's mutually beneficial to you and them. And that's what the Old Testament, many passages in the Old Testament are about, mutually beneficial. Someone poor working for someone rich, working off the debt, because they didn't have money. They didn't have the economic system we did. Silver was their way, or trading animals. And so we can understand that, and that's different from the idea that comes later in 1616. Exodus 21:16, if someone is kidnapped and sells a man, he'll be put to death. That's forced slavery. The Bible did condemn that. 1 Timothy 1:8-10, the law was made for the lawless, insubordinate, ungodly, sinners, kidnappers, and slaves, depending on the version you read. If a slave ran away, Deuteronomy 23:15-16, he had rights to stay with the person who was he was pleased to stay with. You couldn't go after them and say, that's my slave, they have to come back. They had rights. Slaves had rights because they were servants, indentured servants. And they were covered by God to not be abused. But did abuses occur just like they did in marriage? Yes. In the New Testament, you have the idea of turning the cheek. Persecution. Did the Bible stop persecution when Jesus came on the scene? Did he stop all persecution? No, he was persecuted. His disciples were persecuted. But he told them, here's how you deal with it in this society because of free will, man's social order. You turn the other cheek. You have to teach others what is right, and you are going to be the servant to them. That's hard. Because I don't know if I can turn the other cheek every time I deal with a situation. I have to think about it and decide that is the best way. If I don't fly off the handle or my anger is up, I have to decide, what am I doing? Who am I? Who do I really belong to? Well, Adam and Eve belonged to God. It doesn't say he was their master, but wasn't he? He's their creator in his image. He owned them, but yet he gave them everything. And even when they sinned, he gave them and mankind the freedom. Do what you want. But when you're in a covenant with me, I'm going to stipulate limitations because you belong to me. And so when Jesus died, and even his grave was a slave's grave, bought for him, that tomb, he died on the cross in the sense as a slave to mankind. He bought us with a price, blood. So now we belong to him. We're slaves to Christ in the New Testament. Now, as I'm losing time and I can't go over all the verses, Deuteronomy 9:4 speaks about this. There was the government of people, Israel, over another to rule over their wickedness. It was to curtail evil society, Deuteronomy 9:4. As I said, Abraham had slaves. Others in the New Testament, Jacob was a slave to Laban. Joseph was a slave to Pharaoh. The 12 tribes were slaves at one point. The nation of Israel was a slave to Babylon. The law of Moses allowed slaves or servants. It did not stop it, it regulated it. And Hebrews 21:2 had a limit on the time. They were indentured servants. That would be the more precise idea. Leviticus 25:39 and 40. Do not make them work as slaves. They are to be treated as hired workers or temporary residents among you. Leviticus 25:39-40. Deuteronomy 15:13, when you release them, do not send them away empty-handed. Supply them liberally from your flock, your threshing floor, your winepress. Give them as your Lord has blessed you. Deuteronomy 15:13-14. Is that a slave? It's negative. They're treated properly because they were working off a debt. God was watchful, but there is man's free will. Abuse can occur, and God had penalties about that. Exodus 21, outside of Israel, slaves had no rights. They were abused by other foreigners. But within Israel, you had rights. It wasn't the best situation, but of course, you were poor. You came from a prisoner, you were a prisoner of war. God made provisions to take care of you. You could be adopted by a family into a family by marriage. Exodus 21:9. 21 verse 3, you had a right to keep a wife. Verse 8, a right not to be sold to foreigners. Verse 10, you had a right to food and clothing. Verse 20, 26, and 27 of Exodus 21, there were limits to corporal punishment. If you would beat someone, and yes, that's how mankind dealt with one another. If someone, they didn't have the court system as we do, they didn't have prisons as we do, and so you would physically beat somebody. The Bible said, be careful with that. If you abuse them and knock out a tooth or eye, you let them free. That is, if you go too far, you have to let them go. So abuse was limited. Now, you could read into that verse, but don't do it. Carefully, when you read those verses, consider the situation and what God is actually saying and what we think it's saying by the context of the time, what was going on with the ancient people versus us. Leviticus 25:48 and 52 allowed for slave redemption at any time. They could be bought by someone and freed. They could free themselves if they could get the money or save it up. Leviticus 25:47, a Hebrew could sell himself to a Gentile in Israel. You could sell yourself as a slave and say, I'm poor, I don't have any land, I don't have any cattle, I don't have anything. There's a rich Israelite. Can I work for you? Well, the term servant was there. We think slave, but it's not negative. It's for the purpose of helping that person. Slaves were to be treated as hired workers, Leviticus 25:53. Not treated ruthlessly, Leviticus 25 and 54, slaves were released to families in the year of Jubilee. When we come to the New Testament, God did not direct that the emancipation of slaves occur. So you get into Paul in the letter Philemon concerning Onesimus. You have Jesus in his ministry. You have the apostles. You have... You're going to find slavery all throughout the Bible. But the word slave was not in the original because the word didn't exist. So when you read servant, bondservant, master, slave, as you read in your translation, realize those are new words translated that they think these are the best words for us to understand what was going on. Just don't carry the baggage with it because there is a wrong way to look at that word. It can be a good word because it was mutual, beneficial. The negative word, the dark word, kidnapping someone, abusing them, there's nothing good about that. But that only happened in the United States, America, other parts of Americas, and other countries, continental Europe and so forth. In the New Testament, people might say, well, why didn't Jesus address it? Why didn't he stop it? He didn't stop persecution. He corrected them on marriage. Today we have a thing called same-sex marriage. We know that's not in the Bible. It doesn't come from the Bible. Why doesn't God stop it? Well, he regulates it. It's in the New Testament. It should deal with a person when they become a Christian to regulate it themselves and see that that is wrong morally because it's the design doesn't exist in the Bible to operate that way. So he said some things about it, so that is a regulation for the individual to take care of it. It's not political. Jesus said to Pharaoh, to the Pilate, if my servants were of this world, my kingdom, my servants would fight. It's not a political war, it's a spiritual one. And so Pilate was not afraid of this man. He saw he was innocent. He called him the king of the Jews. They didn't like that. They said, we don't want him as our king. Why? They'd have to be subservient to him. They'd have to accept God, Jesus, as God, the Son of God, and say, he's our king. So we're all a slave to somebody. As Christians, we're slaves to Christ. But it's good. It's spiritual. What debt are we working off? The cross. Because we couldn't do it. No man could fulfill it. But as Christians, do we owe Jesus Christ a debt? Yes. He bought us with his blood. Are we using that debt to earn salvation? No. Because we were bought with a price. We didn't do anything. It was God's mercy, saved by grace. But as a Christian, do you want to work off that debt? I would say every Christian would say yes. So we're indebted slaves. We are making ourselves slaves to God. That's a good thing. Because look what you get. Eternal paradise restored with God in his presence. What Adam and Eve lost. Now, in the meantime, we have to work for somebody else. But Jesus says, be careful to not love that one you're working for. You must love God. You have to work for mammon, but keep it limited within the provisions of the New Testament. So as I bring this to a close, I didn't go over everything I wanted to. There's a lot to it. Realize the Bible and slavery, when you study it, young children, those growing up studying the Bible, when you read words, our words change in meaning. When you read the Old Testament, New Testament, read a good commentator, read a good Strong's Concordance, Young's Concordance, the actual word meanings, because meanings change, words change. Ancient servanthood or slavery is different from modern slavery, and there's different words incorporated today concerning bond servants, manservants, and servants. The Hebrew word ebed, servant, and the Greek word doulos, servant. Translators incorporated our new words, and it changes the meaning if you keep modern eyes looking at those verses. Take the most literal translation you have. In the King James, I only found at one time the word slave is Jeremiah. And then over more translations, that word grows. It grows more and more because keep translators say, oh, that's a slave, a servant slave. Manservant, what is that? Bondservant? We don't use that. Put slave in there. So when you read translations with all those words slaves, it can paint your idea of what that means. Go back to the original. The gospel didn't stop social order, injustices by political uprisings, as I said, Jesus to Pilate, but it does change hearts, individuals, to change societies, and that's how the gospel works. I'll say a few more things and close this. Slavery is a very broad term. I'm never saying slavery is right. In the United States, there was a very dark time where that word slavery was full of abuses. What happened in the United States is totally wrong. But what those people did then, I'm not ashamed of being an American or being white. I don't address that as those who did that. Those who did that have nothing to do with me. I don't know about my forefathers if they owned slaves or not. The genealogy I know is the white part of me is a little bit of Germany and Irish maybe. The other part of me is American Indian. Indians had slaves. When the colonists came, they enslaved Indians. Indians enslaved each other. And prisoners of war, white people were enslaved. Well, what is a white person? I hear on the internet people are ashamed to be white. Why? You're looking at it incorrectly. Are you responsible for your grandfather, great-grandfather, your ancestors, what they did? I don't expect my children and grandchildren to be responsible for anything I do. If I do it, I do it. And that's how God holds people accountable. Each person, according to the Bible, is judged by what they do. If a society comes along and creates some sin, God is going to deal with that. But what we do as individuals, that's how the Bible works on an individual level. So if you want to feel guilty about that, that's fine. As a society, as a government, should the government fix those issues? Yes. The Bible teaches that. To love one another, to love your neighbor as yourself. The Bible teaches that. Society should change. When we get to Paul, he endorsed godly submission, not sinful forms of slavery. In 1 Peter 2, 13 and 17, It's taught there, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, custom to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Romans 13, 1 through 7 is what I meant to say. And then Peter writes in 1 Peter 2, 13 and 17. So we have Romans 13, 1 and 7. 1 Peter 2, 13. Therefore submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors, for this is the will of God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. If Christ had said, stop all forms of slavery in the New Testament with the Roman government, it would have been a political move. His disciples would have had to enforce it, and they would have been killed. Rome had a rule, and they had a military to back it up, just as the United States. If you go against something that the law said is okay with them, they will either kill you, as they did then, or imprison you. And Paul was in prison for what? In preaching the gospel, trying to change hearts. When he met a runaway slave, Onesimus, he said, go back to Philemon. I'm going to write him a letter and tell him to treat you as a brother, to love you. Onesimus was a changed man. He was converted. He went back as a free man in Christ. He was still a slave to Philemon. But Philemon was to understand now, even though he was living in a social order, how he should treat his so-called slave. Treat him as a brother. Treat him properly. Give him everything you would give as a brother. And Paul had taught them that. So there was corruption. We have to understand, and as we study the New Testament and other places in the Bible, how to study those things. Well, I'll close with the idea that I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. I'm not making light of slavery in any way. Slavery as we understand it. The dark times of slavery. Understand it properly. Being bonded to someone, to be in indebted servitude, was mutually beneficial in the Old Testament and in the New. And God made provisions how we should treat people. And he never approved of that kind of slavery that happened in America. And that was done away with some people who were so-called founders of our country who said it was wrong. And they had the power, and of course many lives were lost in the Civil War, also in the church, because the church was involved in some of those wars, because they misunderstood the scriptures. And people do that. Maybe good intentions, but they can misread. And there's a Bible called the Slave Bible, where it was presented to slaves that here's what the Bible says. And they removed all the passages that would be good or right, that would make provisions for slaves. And they left the ones in that you might interpret as negative. Obey your masters. They left those verses in. That's wrong. But people have been corrupted by even religion and others with their own intent. So we give you the lesson this morning. Maybe I'll give it more in a PowerPoint to go over more specifics as I condense this down. But we hope this is helpful to us to understand a little bit of the history of slavery and how to understand word changes and ancient cultures and our culture, and not to mix those things when we study the Bible, and to be fair with the Bible and not be uncomfortable, but have confidence when we study the Bible as to its true meaning when someone asks us, what about this slavery in the Bible? Well, we give the gospel message to you this morning, to hear, believe, repent, confess, and be baptized, because Jesus, as a servant to us, to mankind, died for us. And he's given us the opportunity to serve God spiritually, to be slaves to God in a good sense, to honor our master, to live for the king. And he's going to bless us with everything beyond anything that we deserve. Eternal life and peace here. If you are a Christian, and if you've sinned in some way, if you need the prayers of others, we'd like to assist you also at this time. Won't you come while we stand and sing?